Chapter 14, Continued. For a second, Harry was almost sure Dumbledore's eyes flickered towards the corner where he and Ron stood hidden.
"Admirable sentiments," said Malfoy, bowing. "We shall all miss your highly individual way of running things, Albus, and only hope that your successor will manage to prevent any, killings." He strode to the cabin door, opened it, and bowed Dumbledore out.
Fudge, fiddling with his bowler, waited for Hagrid to go ahead of him, but Hagrid stood his ground, took a deep breath, and said carefully,
"If anyone wanted to find out some stuff, all they'd have to do would be to follow the spiders. That'd lead 'em right. That's all I'm saying."
Fudge stared at him in amazement.
"All right, I'm coming,"
said Hagrid, pulling on his moleskin overcoat. But as he was about to follow Fudge through the door, he stopped again and said loudly,
"And someone'll need to feed Fang while I'm away."
The door banged shut, and Ron pulled the invisibility cloak off.
"We're in trouble now," he said hoarsely. "No Dumbledore. They might as well close the school tonight. There'll be an attack a day with him gone."
Fang started howling, scratching at the closed door. Chapter 15, Aragog. Summer was creeping over the grounds around the castle. Sky and lake alike turned periwinkle blue, and flowers large as cabbages burst into bloom in the greenhouses. But with no Hagrid visible from the castle windows, striding the grounds with Fang at his heels, the scene didn't look right to Harry. No better, in fact, than the inside of the castle, where things were so horribly wrong. Harry and Ron had tried to visit Hermione, but visitors were now barred from the hospital wing.
"We are taking no more chances,"
Madame Pomfrey told them severely through a crack in the hospital door.
"No, I'm sorry. There's every chance the attacker might come back to finish these people off."
With Dumbledore gone, fear had spread as never before, so that the sun warming the castle walls outside seemed to stop at the mullioned windows. There was barely a face to be seen in the school that didn't look worried and tense, and any laughter that rang through the corridors sounded shrill and unnatural, and was quickly stifled. Harry constantly repeated Dumbledore's final words to himself. "I will only truly have left this school when none here are loyal to me. Help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it." But what good were these words? Who exactly were they supposed to ask for help, when everyone was just as confused and scared as they were? Hagrid's hint about the spiders was far easier to understand. The trouble was, there didn't seem to be a single spider left in the castle to follow. Harry looked everywhere he went, helped, rather reluctantly, by Ron. They were hampered, of course, by the fact that they weren't allowed to wander off on their own, but had to move around the castle in a pack with the other Gryffindors. Most of their fellow students seemed glad that they were being shepherded from class to class by teachers, but Harry found it very irksome. One person, however, seemed to be thoroughly enjoying the atmosphere of terror and suspicion. Draco Malfoy was strutting around the school as though he had just been appointed head boy. Harry didn't realize what he was so pleased about until the potions lesson about a fortnight after Dumbledore and Hagrid had left, when, sitting right behind Malfoy, Harry overheard him gloating to Crabbe and Goyle.
"I always thought Father might be the one who got rid of Dumbledore," he said, not troubling to keep his voice down. "I told you, he thinks Dumbledore's the worst headmaster the school's ever had. Maybe we'll get a decent headmaster now, someone who won't want the Chamber of Secrets closed. McGonagall won't last long, she's only filling in."
Snape swept past Harry, making no comment about Hermione's empty seat and cauldron.
"Sir," said Malfoy loudly, "sir, why don't you apply for the headmaster's job? "Now, now, Malfoy," said Snape, though he couldn't suppress a thin-lipped smile. "Professor Dumbledore has only been suspended by the governors. I dare say he'll be back with us soon enough." "Yeah, right," said Malfoy, smirking. "I expect you'd have Father's vote, sir, if you wanted to apply for the job. I'll tell Father you're the best teacher here, sir." Snape smirked as he swept off around the dungeon, fortunately not spotting Seamus Finnegan, who was pretending to vomit into his cauldron. "I'm quite surprised the Mudbloods haven't all packed their bags by now," Malfoy went on. "Bet you 5 galleons the next one dies. Pity it wasn't Granger." The bell rang at that moment, which was lucky. At Malfoy's last words, Ron had leapt off his stool, and in the scramble to collect bags and books, his attempts to reach Malfoy went unnoticed. "Let me at him!" Ron growled, as Harry and Dean hung onto his arms. "I don't care. I don't need my wand. I'm going to kill him with my bare hands!" "Hurry up! I've got to take you all to Herbology!" barked Snape over the class's heads, and off they went, crocodile fashion, with Harry, Ron, and Dean bringing up the rear, Ron still trying to get loose. It was only safe to let go of him when Snape had seen them out of the castle, and they were making their way across the vegetable patch towards the greenhouses. The herbology class was very subdued. There were now 2 missing from their number, Justin and Hermione. Professor Sprout set them all to work pruning the Abyssinian shrivel figs. Harry went to tip an armful of withered stalks onto the compost heap and found himself face to face with Ernie Macmillan. Ernie took a deep breath and said very formally, "I just want to say, Harry, that I'm sorry I ever suspected you. I know you'd never attack Hermione Granger, and I apologize for all the stuff I said. We're all in the same boat now, and, well..." He held out a pudgy hand, and Harry shook it. Ernie and his friend Hannah came to work at the same shrivel fig as Harry and Ron. "That Draco Malfoy character," said Ernie, breaking off dead twigs. "He seems very pleased about all this, doesn't he? Do you know, I think he might be Slytherin's heir."
"That's clever of you," said Ron, who didn't seem to have forgiven Ernie as readily as Harry.
"Do you think it's Malfoy, Harry?" Ernie asked.
"No," said Harry, so firmly that Ernie and Hannah stared. A second later, Harry spotted something that made him hit Ron over the hand with his pruning shears.
"Ouch! What are you..."
Harry was pointing at the ground a few feet away. Several large spiders were scurrying across the earth.
"Oh, yeah," said Ron, trying and failing to look pleased. "But we can't follow them now."
Ernie and Hannah were listening curiously. Harry watched the spiders running away. "Looks like they're heading for the Forbidden Forest." And Ron looked even unhappier about that. At the end of the lesson, Professor Snape escorted the class to their Defence Against the Dark Arts lesson. Harry and Ron lagged behind the others so they could talk out of earshot. "We'll have to use the invisibility cloak again," Harry told Ron. "We can take Fang with us. He's used to going into the forest with Hagrid. He might be some help."
"Right," said Ron, who was twirling his wand nervously in his fingers. Aren't there supposed to be werewolves in the forest?" he added, as they took their usual places at the back of Lockhart's classroom.
Preferring not to answer that question, Harry said, "There are good things in there, too. The centaurs are all right, and the unicorns."
Ron had never been into the Forbidden Forest before. Harry had entered it only once, and had hoped never to do so again. Lockhart bounded into the room, and the class stared at him. Every other teacher in the place was looking grimmer than usual, but Lockhart appeared nothing short of buoyant.
"Come now!" he cried, beaming around him. "Why all these long faces?"
People swapped exasperated looks, but nobody answered.
"Don't you people realize," said Lockhart, speaking slowly, as though they were all a bit dim, "the danger has passed. The culprit has been taken away."
"Says who?" said Dean Thomas, loudly.
"My dear young man, the Minister of Magic wouldn't have taken Hagrid if he hadn't been 100% sure
that he was guilty," said Lockhart, in the tone of someone explaining that one and one made two.
"Oh, yes, he would,"
said Ron, even more loudly than Dean.
"I flatter myself I know a touch more about Hagrid's arrest than you do, Mr. Weasley," said Lockhart, in a self-satisfied tone.
Ron started to say that he didn't think so somehow, but stopped in mid-sentence when Harry kicked him hard under the desk.
"We weren't there, remember?" Harry muttered.
But Lockhart's disgusting cheeriness, his hints that he had always thought Hagrid was no good, his confidence that the whole business was now at an end, irritated Harry so much that he yearned to throw Gadding with Ghouls right in Lockhart's stupid face. Instead, he contented himself with scrawling a note to Ron. "Let's do it tonight." Ron read the message, swallowed hard, and looked sideways at the empty seat usually filled by Hermione. The sight seemed to stiffen his resolve, and he nodded. The Gryffindor common room was always very crowded these days, because from 6 o'clock onwards the Gryffindors had nowhere else to go. They also had plenty to talk about, with the result that the common room often didn't empty until past midnight. Harry went to get the invisibility cloak out of his trunk right after dinner, and spent the evening sitting on it, waiting for the room to clear. Fred and George challenged Harry and Ron to a few games of exploding snap, and Ginny sat watching them, very subdued, in Hermione's usual chair. Harry and Ron kept losing on purpose, trying to finish the games quickly, but even so, it was well past midnight when Fred, George and Ginny finally went to bed. Harry and Ron waited for the distant sounds of two dormitory doors closing before seizing the cloak, throwing it over themselves, and climbing through the portrait hole. It was another difficult journey through the castle, dodging all the teachers. At last they reached the entrance hall, slid back the lock on the oak front doors, squeezed between them, trying to stop any creaking, and stepped out into the moonlit grounds.
"Course," said Ron abruptly, as they strode across the black grass, "we might get to the forest and find there's nothing to follow. Those spiders might not have been going there at all. I know it looked like they were moving in that sort of general direction, but—"
His voice tailed away, hopefully. They reached Hagrid's house, sad and sorry-looking with its blank windows. When Harry pushed the door open, Fang went mad with joy at the sight of them. Worried he might wake everyone at the castle with his deep, booming barks, they hastily fed him treacle fudge from a tin on the mantelpiece, which glued his teeth together. Harry left the invisibility cloak on Hagrid's table. There would be no need for it in the pitch-dark forest.
"Come on, Fang, we're going for a walk," said Harry, patting his leg, and Fang bounded happily out of the house behind them, dashed to the edge of the forest, and lifted his leg against a large sycamore tree.
Harry took out his wand, murmured "Lumos," and a tiny light appeared at the end of it, just enough to let them watch the path for signs of spiders.
"Good thinking," said Ron. "I'd light mine too, but, you know, it'd probably blow up or something."
Harry tapped Ron on the shoulder, pointing at the grass. Two solitary spiders were hurrying away from the wand light into the shade of the trees.
"Okay," Ron sighed, as though resigned to the worst. "I'm ready. Let's go."
So, with Fang scampering around them, sniffing tree roots and leaves, they entered the forest. By the glow of Harry's wand, they followed the steady trickle of spiders moving along the path. They walked for about 20 minutes, not speaking, listening hard for noises other than breaking twigs and rustling leaves. Then, when the trees had become thicker than ever, so that the stars overhead were no longer visible, and Harry's wand shone alone in the sea of dark, they saw their spider guides leaving the path. Harry paused, trying to see where the spiders were going, but everything outside his little sphere of light was pitch black. He had never been this deep into the forest before. He could vividly remember Hagrid advising him not to leave the forest path last time he'd been in here.
But Hagrid was miles away now, probably sitting in a cell in Azkaban, and he had also said to follow the spiders. Something wet touched Harry's hand, and he jumped backwards, crushing Ron's foot. But it was only Fang's nose. "What do you reckon?" Harry said to Ron, whose eyes he could just make out, reflecting the light from his wand. "We've come this far," said Ron. So they followed the darting shadows of the spiders into the trees. They couldn't move very quickly now. There were tree roots and stumps in their way, barely visible in the near blackness. Harry could feel Fang's hot breath on his hand. More than once they had to stop, so that Harry could crouch down and find the spiders in the wandlight. They walked for what seemed like at least half an hour, their robes snagging on low-slung branches and brambles. After a while, they noticed that the ground seemed to be sloping downwards, though the trees were as thick as ever. Then Fang suddenly let loose a great echoing bark, making both Harry and Ron jump out of their skins. "What?" said Ron loudly, looking around into the pitch dark and gripping Harry's elbow very hard. "There's something moving over there," Harry breathed. "Listen. Sounds like something big." They listened. Some distance to their right, the something big was snapping branches as it carved a path through the trees. "Oh, no," said Ron. "Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, shut up!" said Harry frantically. "It'll hear you."
"Hear me?" said Ron in an unnaturally high voice. "It's already heard Fang."
The darkness seemed to be pressing on their eyeballs as they stood, terrified, waiting. There was a strange rumbling noise, and then silence.
"What do you think it's doing?" said Harry.
"Probably getting ready to pounce," said Ron.
They waited, shivering, hardly daring to move.
"Do you think it's gone?"
Harry whispered.
"Dunno."
Then, to their right, came a sudden blaze of light, so bright in the darkness that both of them flung up their hands to shield their eyes. Fang yelped and tried to run, but got lodged in a tangle of thorns and yelped even louder.
"Harry!" Ron shouted, his voice breaking with relief. "Harry, it's our car!"
"What?
Come on!"
Harry blundered after Ron towards the light, stumbling and tripping, and a moment later they had emerged into a clearing. Mr. Weasley's car was standing, empty, in the middle of a circle of thick trees under a roof of dense branches, its headlamps ablaze. As Ron walked, open-mouthed, towards it, it moved slowly towards him, exactly like a large turquoise dog greeting its owner.
"It's been here all the time," said Ron delightedly, walking around the car. "Look at it! The forest's turned it wild!"
The wings of the car were scratched and smeared with mud. Apparently it had taken to trundling around the forest on its own. Fang didn't seem at all keen on it. He kept close to Harry, who could feel him quivering. His breathing slowing down again, Harry stuffed his wand back into his robes.
"And we thought it was going to attack us," said Ron, leaning against the car and patting it. "I wonder where it had gone."
Harry squinted around on the floodlit ground for signs of more spiders, but they had all scuttled away from the glare of the headlights.
"We've lost the trail," he said. "Come on, let's go and find them."
Ron didn't speak. He didn't move. His eyes were fixed on a point some 10 feet above the forest floor, right behind Harry. His face was livid with terror. Harry didn't even have time to turn around. There was a loud clicking noise, and suddenly he felt something long and hairy seize him around the middle and lift him off the ground so that he was hanging face down. Struggling, terrified, he heard more clicking and saw Ron's legs leave the ground too, heard Fang whimpering and howling. Next moment he was being swept away into the dark trees. head hanging, Harry saw that what had hold of him was marching on six immensely long, hairy legs, the front two clutching him tightly below a pair of shining black pincers. Behind him, he could hear another of the creatures, no doubt carrying Ron. They were moving into the very heart of the forest. Harry could hear Fang fighting to free himself from a third monster, whining loudly. But Harry couldn't have yelled, even if he had wanted to. He seemed to have left his voice back with the car in the clearing. He never knew how long he was in the creature's clutches. He only knew that the darkness suddenly lifted enough for him to see that the leaf-strewn ground was now swarming with spiders. Craning his neck sideways, he realized that they had reached the rim of a vast hollow, a hollow which had been cleared of trees so that the stars shone brightly onto the worst scene he had ever clapped eyes upon. Spiders. Not tiny spiders like those surging over the leaves below. Spiders the size of cart horses, eight-eyed, eight-legged, black, hairy, gigantic. The massive specimen that was carrying Harry made its way down the steep slope towards a misty domed web in the very centre of the hollow, while its fellows closed in all around it, clicking their pincers excitedly at the sight of its load. Harry fell to the ground on all fours as the spider released him. Ron and Fang thudded down next to him. Fang wasn't howling any more, but cowering silently on the spot. Ron looked exactly like Harry felt. His mouth was stretched wide in a kind of silent scream, and his eyes were popping. Harry suddenly realized that the spider which had dropped him was saying something. It had been hard to tell because he clicked his pincers with every word he spoke.
Aragog, it called. Aragog!
And from the middle of the misty domed web, a spider the size of a small elephant emerged, very slowly. There was grey in the black of his body and legs, and each of the eyes on his ugly, pincered head was milky white. He was blind.
"What is it?"
he said, clicking his pincers rapidly.
"Men!"
clicked the spider who had caught Harry.
"Is it Hagrid?"
said Aragog, moving closer, his eight milky eyes wandering vaguely.
"Strangers!"
clicked the spider who had brought Ron.
"Kill them!"
clicked Aragog fretfully.
"I was sleeping!"
"We're friends of Hagrid's!"
Harry shouted. His heart seemed to have left his chest to pound in his throat.
Click, click, click!
Went the pincers of the spiders all around the hollow. Aragog paused.
"Hagrid has never sent men into our hollow before," he said slowly.
"Hagrid's in trouble," said Harry, breathing very fast. "That's why we've come."
"In trouble?" said the aged spider,
and Harry thought he heard concern beneath the clicking pincers.
"But why has he sent you?"
Harry thought of getting to his feet, but decided against it. He didn't think his legs would support him, so he spoke from the ground as calmly as he could.
"They think, up at the school, that Hagrid's been setting a something on students. They've taken him to Azkaban."
Aragog clicked his pincers furiously, and all around the hollow the sound was echoed by the crowd of spiders. It was like applause, except applause didn't usually make Harry feel sick with fear.
"But that was years ago," said Aragog fretfully. "Years and years ago. I remember it well. That's why they made him leave the school. They believed that I was the monster that dwells in what they call the Chamber of Secrets. They thought that Hagrid had opened the chamber and set me free."
"And you didn't come from the Chamber of Secrets?" said Harry, who could feel cold sweat on his forehead.
"I," said Aragog, clicking angrily, "I was not born in the castle. I come from a distant land.
A traveller gave me to Hagrid when I was an egg. Hagrid was only a boy, but he cared for me, hidden in a cupboard in the castle, feeding me on scraps from the table. Hagrid is my good friend, and a good man. When I was discovered and blamed for the death of a girl, he protected me. I have lived here in the forest ever since, where Hagrid still visits me. He even found me a wife, Mossag. And you see how our family has grown, all through Hagrid's goodness.
Harry summoned what remained of his courage.
So you never attacked anyone?
Never, croaked the old spider. It would have been my instinct, but from respect of Hagrid I never harmed a human. The body of the girl who was killed was discovered in a bathroom. I never saw any part of the castle but the cupboard in which I grew up. Our kind like the dark and the quiet.
But then, do you know what did kill that girl? Said Harry. Because whatever it is, it's back and attacking people again.
His words were drowned by a loud outbreak of clicking and the rustling of many long legs shifting angrily. Large black shapes shifted all around him.
"The thing that lives in the castle," said Aragog, "is an ancient creature we spiders fear above all others. Well do I remember how I pleaded with Hagrid to let me go when I sensed the beast moving about the school."
"What is it?" said Harry urgently.
More loud clicking, more rustling. The spiders seemed to be closing in.
"We do not speak of it!" said Aragog fiercely. "We do not name it. I never even told Hagrid the name of that dread creature, though he asked me many times."
Harry didn't want to press the subject, not with the spiders pressing closer on all sides. Aragog seemed to be tired of talking. He was backing slowly into his domed web, but his fellow spiders continued to inch slowly towards Harry and Ron.
"We'll just go, then," Harry called desperately to Aragog, hearing leaves rustling behind him.
"Go?" said Aragog slowly. "I think not.
But—"
"My sons and daughters do not harm Hagrid on my command. But I cannot deny them fresh meat when it wanders so willingly into our midst. Goodbye, friend of Hagrid."
Harry spun around. Feet away, towering above him, was a solid wall of spiders, clicking, their many eyes gleaming in their ugly black heads. Even as he reached for his wand, Harry knew it was no good. There were too many of them. But as he tried to stand, ready to die fighting, a loud, long note sounded, and a blaze of light flamed through the hollow. Mr. Weasley's car was thundering down the slope, headlamps glaring, its horn screeching, knocking spiders aside. Several were thrown onto their backs, their endless legs waving in the air. The car screeched to a halt in front of Harry and Ron, and the doors flew open.
"Get Fang!" Harry yelled, diving into the front seat.
Ron seized the boarhound round the middle and threw him, yelping, into the back of the car. The doors slammed shut. Ron didn't touch the accelerator, but the car didn't need him. The engine roared, and they were off, hitting more spiders. They sped up the slope, out of the hollow, and they were soon crashing through the forest, branches whipping the windows as the car wound its way cleverly through the widest gaps, following a path it obviously knew. Harry looked sideways at Ron. His mouth was still open in the silent scream, but his eyes weren't popping any more.
"Are you okay?"
Ron stared straight ahead, unable to speak. They smashed their way through the undergrowth, Fang howling loudly in the back seat, and Harry saw the wing mirror snap off as they squeezed past a large oak. After 10 noisy, rocky minutes, the trees thinned, and Harry could see again patches of sky. The car stopped,
so suddenly that they were nearly thrown into the windscreen. They had reached the edge of the forest. Fang flung himself at the window in his anxiety to get out, and when Harry opened the door, he shot off through the trees to Hagrid's house, tail between his legs. Harry got out too, and after a minute or so, Ron seemed to regain the feeling in his limbs and followed, still stiff-necked and staring. Harry gave the car a grateful pat as it reversed back into the forest and disappeared from view. Harry went back into Hagrid's cabin to get the invisibility cloak. Fang was trembling under a blanket in his basket. When Harry got outside again, he found Ron being violently sick in the pumpkin patch. "Follow the spiders," said Ron weakly, wiping his mouth on his sleeve. "I'll never forgive Hagrid. We're lucky to be alive." "I bet he thought Aragog wouldn't hurt friends of his," said Harry.
"That's exactly Hagrid's problem," said Ron, thumping the wall of the cabin. "He always thinks monsters aren't as bad as they're made out, and look where it's got him, a cell in Azkaban."
He was shivering uncontrollably now.
"What was the point of sending us in there? What have we found out, I'd like to know?"
"That Hagrid never opened the Chamber of Secrets," said Harry, throwing the cloak over Ron and prodding him in the arm to make him walk. "He was innocent." Ron gave a loud snort. Evidently, hatching Aragog out in a cupboard wasn't his idea of being innocent. As the castle loomed nearer, Harry twitched the cloak to make sure their feet were hidden, then pushed the creaking front doors ajar. They walked carefully back across the entrance hall and up the marble staircase, holding their breath as they passed corridors where watchful sentries were walking. At last they reached the safety of the Gryffindor common room, where the fire had burned itself into glowing ash. They took off the cloak and climbed the winding staircase to their dormitory. Ron fell onto his bed without bothering to get undressed. Harry, however, didn't feel very sleepy. He sat on the edge of his four-poster, thinking hard about everything Aragog had said. The creature that was lurking somewhere in the castle, he thought, sounded like a sort of monster Voldemort. Even other monsters didn't want to name it. But he and Ron were no closer to finding out what it was or how it petrified its victims. Even Hagrid had never known what was in the Chamber of Secrets. Harry swung his legs up onto his bed and leaned back against his pillows, watching the moon glinting at him through the tower window. He couldn't see what else they could do. They had hit dead ends everywhere. Riddle had caught the wrong person. The heir of Slytherin had got off, and no one could tell whether it was the same person or a different one who had opened the chamber this time. There was nobody else to ask. Harry lay down, still thinking about what Aragog said. He was becoming drowsy when what seemed like their very last hope occurred to him, and he suddenly sat bolt upright.
"Ron!" he hissed through the dark. "Ron!"
Ron woke with a yelp like Fang's, stared wildly around and saw Harry.
"Ron, that girl who died. Aragog said she was found in a bathroom," said Harry, ignoring Neville's snuffling snores from the corner. "What if she never left the bathroom? What if she's still there?"
Ron rubbed his eyes, frowning through the moonlight, and then he understood.
"You don't think. Not Moaning Myrtle."
Chapter 16. The Chamber of Secrets.
"All those times we were in that bathroom and she was just three toilets away," said Ron bitterly at breakfast next day, "and we could have asked her. And now..."
It had been hard enough trying to look for spiders.
escaping their teachers long enough to sneak into a girl's bathroom. The girl's bathroom, moreover, right next to the scene of the first attack, was going to be almost impossible. But something happened in their first lesson, Transfiguration, which drove the Chamber of Secrets out of their minds for the first time in weeks. 10 minutes into the class, Professor McGonagall told them that their exams would start on the 1st of June, 1 week from today.
"Exams!" howled Seamus Finnegan. "We're still getting exams!"
There was a loud bang behind Harry as Neville Longbottom's wand slipped, vanishing one of the legs on his desk. Professor McGonagall restored it with a wave of her own wand and turned, frowning, to Seamus.
"The whole point of keeping the school open at this time is for you to receive your education," she said sternly. "The exams will therefore take place as usual, and I trust you are all revising hard."
Revising hard? It had never occurred to Harry that there would be exams with the castle in this state. There was a great deal of mutinous muttering around the room, which made Professor McGonagall scowl even more darkly.
"Professor Dumbledore's instructions were to keep the school running as normally as possible," she said, "and that, I need hardly point out, means finding out how much you have learned this year."
Harry looked down at the pair of white rabbits he was supposed to be turning into slippers. What had he learned so far this year? He couldn't seem to think of anything that would be useful in an exam. Ron looked as though he'd just been told he had to go and live in the Forbidden Forest. "Can you imagine me taking exams with this?" he asked Harry, holding up his wand, which had just started whistling loudly. 3 days before their first exam, Professor McGonagall made another announcement at breakfast.
"I have good news," she said,
and the great hall, instead of falling silent, erupted.
"Dumbledore's coming back," several people yelled joyfully. "You've caught the heir of Slytherin," squealed a girl on the Ravenclaw table. "Quidditch matches are back on," roared Wood excitedly.
When the hubbub had subsided, Professor McGonagall said,
"Professor Sprout has informed me that the mandrakes are ready for cutting at last. Tonight we will be able to revive those people who have been petrified. I need hardly remind you all that one of them may well be able to tell us who or what attacked them. I am hopeful that this dreadful year will end with our catching the culprit."
There was an explosion of cheering. Harry looked over at the Slytherin table and wasn't at all surprised to see that Draco Malfoy hadn't joined in. Ron, however, was looking happier than he'd looked in days.
"It won't matter that we never asked Myrtle, then," he said to Harry. "Hermione'll probably have all the answers when they wake her up. Mind you, she'll go mad when she finds out we've got exams in 3 days' time. She hasn't revised. It might be kinder to leave her where she is till they're over."
Just then Ginny Weasley came over and sat down next to Ron. She looked tense and nervous, and Harry noticed that her hands were twisting in her lap.
"What's up?" said Ron, helping himself to more porridge.
Ginny didn't say anything, but glanced up and down the Gryffindor table with a scared look on her face that reminded Harry of someone, though he couldn't think who.
"Spit it out," said Ron, watching her.
Harry suddenly realized who Ginny looked like. She was rocking backwards and forwards slightly in her chair, exactly like Dobby did when he was teetering on the edge of revealing forbidden information.
"I've got to tell you something,"
Ginny mumbled, carefully not looking at Harry.
"What is it?" said Harry.
Ginny looked as though she couldn't find the right words.
"What?"
said Ron. Ginny opened her mouth, but no sound came out. Harry leaned forward and spoke quietly, so that only Ginny and Ron could hear him.
"Is it something about the Chamber of Secrets? Have you seen something? Someone acting oddly?"
Ginny drew a deep breath, and at that precise moment Percy Weasley appeared, looking tired and wan.
"If you've finished eating, I'll take that seat, Ginny. I'm starving. I've only just come off patrol duty."
Ginny jumped up as though her chair had just been electrified, gave Percy a fleeting, frightened look, and scarpered away. Percy sat down and grabbed a mug from the centre of the table.
"Percy!" said Ron angrily. "She was just about to tell us something important."
Halfway through a gulp of tea, Percy choked.
"What sort of thing?" he said, coughing.
"I just asked her if she'd seen anything odd, and she started to say..."
"Oh, that! That's nothing to do with the Chamber of Secrets," said Percy at once.
"How do you know?" said Ron, his eyebrows raised.
"Well, if you must know, Ginny, walked in on me the other day when I was... Well, never mind. The point is, she spotted me doing something, and I asked her not to mention it to anybody. I must say, I did think she'd keep her word. It's nothing, really. I'd just rather..."
Harry had never seen Percy look so uncomfortable.
"What were you doing, Percy?" said Ron, grinning. "Go on, tell us. We won't laugh."
Percy didn't smile back.
"Pass me those rolls, Harry. I'm starving."
Harry knew the whole mystery might be solved tomorrow without their help, but he wasn't about to pass up a chance to speak to Myrtle if it turned up, and to his delight it did, mid-morning, when they were being led to History of Magic by Gilderoy Lockhart. Lockhart, who had so often assured them that all danger had passed, only to be proved wrong straight away, was now wholeheartedly convinced that it was hardly worth the trouble to see them safely down the corridors. His hair wasn't as sleek as usual. It seemed he had been up most of the night patrolling the fourth floor.
"Mark my words," he said, ushering them around a corner. "The first words out of those poor, petrified people's mouths will be, 'It was Hagrid.' Frankly, I'm astounded Professor McGonagall thinks all these security measures are necessary."
"I agree, sir," said Harry, making Ron drop his books in surprise.
"Thank you, Harry,"
said Lockhart graciously, while they waited for a long line of Hufflepuffs to pass.
"I mean, we teachers have quite enough to be getting on with without walking students to classes and standing guard all night."
"That's right," said Ron, catching on. "Why don't you leave us here, sir? We've only got one more corridor to go."
"You know, Weasley, I think I will," said Lockhart. "I really should go and prepare my next class."
And he hurried off.
"Prepare his class," Ron sneered after him. "Gone to curl his hair, more like."
They let the rest of the Gryffindors draw ahead of them, then darted down a side passage and hurried off towards Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. But just as they were congratulating each other on their brilliant scheme...
"Potter! Weasley! What are you doing?"
It was Professor McGonagall, and her mouth was the thinnest of thin lines.
We were... Ron stammered. "We were going to go and see Hermione," said Harry.
Ron and Professor McGonagall both looked at him.
"We haven't seen her for ages, Professor," Harry went on hurriedly, treading on Ron's foot, "and we thought we'd sneak into the hospital wing, you know, and tell her the mandrakes are nearly ready and, not to worry."
Professor McGonagall was still staring at him, and for a moment Harry thought she was going to explode. But when she spoke, it was in a strangely croaky voice.
"Of course,"
she said, and Harry, amazed, saw a tear glistening in her beady eye.
"Of course, I realise this has all been hardest on the friends of those who have been... I quite understand. Yes, Potter, of course you may visit Miss Granger. I will inform Professor Binns where you've gone. Tell Madame Pumphrey I have given my permission."
Harry and Ron walked away, hardly daring to believe that they'd avoided detention. As they turned the corner, they distinctly heard Professor McGonagall blow her nose.
"That," said Ron fervently, "was the best story you've ever come up with."
They had no choice now but to go to the hospital wing and tell Madame Pumphrey that they had Professor McGonagall's permission to visit Hermione. Madame Pumphrey let them in, but reluctantly.
"There's just no point talking to a petrified person," she said, and they had to admit she was right when they'd taken their seats next to Hermione. It was plain that Hermione didn't have the faintest inkling that she had visitors, and that they might just as well tell her bedside cabinet not to worry for all the good it would do. "Wonder if she did see the attacker, though," said Ron, looking sadly at Hermione's rigid face, "because if he sneaked up on them all, no one'll ever know." But Harry wasn't looking at Hermione's face. He was more interested in her right hand. It lay clenched on top of her blankets, and bending closer, he saw that a piece of paper was scrunched inside her fist. Making sure that Madame Pomfrey was nowhere near, he pointed this out to Ron. "Try and get it out," Ron whispered, shifting his chair so that he blocked Harry from Madame Pomfrey's view. It was no easy task. Hermione's hand was clamped so tightly around the paper that Harry was sure he was going to tear it. While Ron kept watch, he tugged and twisted, and at last, after several tense minutes, the paper came free. It was a page torn from a very old library book. Harry smoothed it out eagerly, and Ron leant close to read it too. "Of the many fearsome beasts and monsters that roam our land, there is none more curious or more deadly than the basilisk, known also as the King of Serpents. This snake, which may reach gigantic size and live many hundreds of years, is born from a chicken's egg hatched beneath a toad. Its methods of killing are most wondrous, for aside from its deadly and venomous fangs, the basilisk has a murderous stare, and all who are fixed with the beam of its eye shall suffer instant death. Spiders flee before the basilisk, for it is their mortal enemy, and the basilisk flees only from the crowing of the rooster, which is fatal to it." And beneath this a single word had been written in a hand Harry recognized as Hermione's. Pipes. It was as though somebody had just flicked a light on in his brain. "Ron," he breathed, "this is it. This is the answer. The monster in the chamber's a basilisk, a giant serpent. That's why I've been hearing that voice all over the place, and nobody else has heard it. It's because I understand parcel tongue." Harry looked up at the beds around him. "The basilisk kills people by looking at them. But no one's died because no one's looked it straight in the eye. Colin saw it through his camera. The basilisk burned up all the film inside it, but Colin just got petrified. Justin must have seen the basilisk through nearly headless Nick. Nick got the full blast of it, but he couldn't die again. And Hermione and that Ravenclaw prefect were found with a mirror next to them. Hermione had just realized the monster was a basilisk. I bet you anything she warned the first person she met to look round corners with a mirror first. And that girl pulled out her mirror and..." Ron's jaw had dropped. "And Mrs. Norris?" he whispered eagerly. Harry thought hard, picturing the scene on the night of Halloween. "The water," he said slowly. "The flood from Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. I bet you Mrs. Norris only saw the reflection." He scanned the page in his hand eagerly. The more he looked at it, the more it made sense. "The crowing of the rooster is fatal to it," he read aloud. "Hagrid's roosters were killed. The heir of Slytherin didn't want one anywhere near the castle once the chamber was opened. Spiders flee before it. It all fits." "But how's the basilisk been getting around the place?" said Ron. "A dirty great snake someone would have seen." Harry, however, pointed at the word Hermione had scribbled at the foot of the page. "Pipes," he said. "Pipes. Ron, it's been using the plumbing. I've been hearing that voice inside the walls." Ron suddenly grabbed Harry's arm. "The entrance to the Chamber of Secrets," he said hoarsely.
What if it's a bathroom? What if it's in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom? Said Harry. They sat there, excitement coursing through them, hardly able to believe it. This means, said Harry, I can't be the only parcel mouth in the school. The heir of Slytherin's one, too. That's how they've been controlling the basilisk.
What are we going to do? Said Ron, whose eyes were flashing.
Shall we go straight to McGonagall?
Let's go to the staff room, said Harry, jumping up. She'll be there in 10 minutes. It's nearly break. They ran downstairs. Not wanting to be discovered hanging around in another corridor, they went straight into the deserted staff room. It was a large, panelled room full of dark wooden chairs. Harry and Ron paced around it, too excited to sit down. But the bell to signal break never came. Instead, echoing through the corridors, came Professor McGonagall's voice, magically magnified.
All students to return to their house dormitories at once. All teachers return to the staff room. Immediately, please.
Harry wheeled around to stare at Ron.
Not another attack. Not now.
What'll we do? Said Ron, aghast.
Go back to the dormitory?
No, said Harry, glancing around. There was an ugly sort of wardrobe to his left, full of the teachers' cloaks.
In here, let's hear what it's all about. Then we can tell them what we've found out.
They hid themselves inside it, listening to the rumbling of hundreds of people moving overhead, and the staff room door banging open. From between the musty folds of the cloaks, they watched the teachers filtering into the room. Some of them were looking puzzled, others downright scared. Then Professor McGonagall arrived.
It has happened, she told the silent staff room. A student has been taken by the monster, right into the chamber itself.
Professor Flitwick let out a squeal. Professor Sprout clapped her hands over her mouth. Snape gripped the back of a chair very hard and said, How can you be sure?
The heir of Slytherin, said Professor McGonagall, who was very white, left another message. Right underneath the first one. Her skeleton will lie in the chamber for ever.
Professor Flitwick burst into tears.
Who is it? Said Madame Hooch, who had sunk weak-kneed into a chair.
Which student?
Ginny Weasley, said Professor McGonagall. Harry felt Ron slide silently down onto the wardrobe floor beside him.
"'We shall have to send all the students home tomorrow,' said Professor McGonagall. "'This is the end of Hogwarts. Dumbledore always said—'
The staffroom door banged open again. For one wild moment, Harry was sure it would be Dumbledore. But it was Lockhart, and he was beaming.
"'So sorry. Dozed off. What have I missed?'
He didn't seem to notice that the other teachers were looking at him with something remarkably like hatred. Snape stepped forward.
"'Just the man,' he said. "'The very man. A girl has been snatched by the monster, Lockhart, taken into the Chamber of Secrets itself. Your moment has come at last.'
Lockhart blanched.
"'That's right, Gilderoy,' chipped in Professor Sprout. "'Weren't you saying just last night that you've known all along "'where the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets is?'
"'I—well, I—' spluttered Lockhart.
"'Yes, didn't you tell me you were sure you knew what was inside it?' "'piped up Professor Flitwick.
"'Did I? I don't recall—'
"'I certainly remember you saying you were sorry you hadn't had a crack at the monster "'before Hagrid was arrested,' said Snape. Didn't you say that the whole affair had been bungled, and that you should have been given a free rein from the first?
Lockhart stared around at his stony-faced colleagues.
I really never. You may have misunderstood.
We'll leave it to you, then, Gilderoy, said Professor McGonagall.
Tonight will be an excellent time to do it. We'll make sure everyone's out of your way. You'll be able to tackle the monster all by yourself. A free rein at last.
Lockhart gazed desperately around him, but nobody came to the rescue. He didn't look remotely handsome any more. His lip was trembling, and in the absence of his usually toothy grin, he looked weak-chinned and weedy.
"Very, very well," he said. I'll be in my office getting ready."
And he left the room.
"Right," said Professor McGonagall, whose nostrils were flared. "That's got him out from under our feet. The heads of houses should go and inform their students what has happened. Tell them the Hogwarts Express will take them home first thing tomorrow. Will the rest of you please make sure no students have been left outside their dormitories?"
The teachers rose and left, one by one. It was probably the worst day of Harry's entire life. He, Ron, Fred and George sat together in a corner of the Gryffindor common room, unable to say anything to each other. Percy wasn't there. He had gone to send an owl to Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, then shut himself up in his dormitory. No afternoon ever lasted as long as that one, nor had Gryffindor Tower ever been so crowded, yet so quiet. Near sunset, Fred and George went up to bed, unable to sit there any longer. "She knew something, Harry," said Ron, speaking for the first time since they had entered the wardrobe in the staff room. "That's why she was taken. It wasn't some stupid thing about Percy at all. She'd found out something about the Chamber of Secrets. That must be why she was..." Ron rubbed his eyes frantically. "I mean, she was a pureblood. There can't be any other reason." Harry could see the sun sinking blood-red below the skyline. This was the worst he had ever felt. If only there was something they could do. Anything. "Harry," said Ron, "do you think there's any chance at all she's not, you know?" Harry didn't know what to say. He couldn't see how Ginny could still be alive. "Do you know what?" said Ron. "I think we should go and see Lockhart. Tell him what we know. He's going to try and get into the chamber. We can tell him where we think it is, and tell him it's a basilisk in there." Because Harry couldn't think of anything else to do, and because he wanted to be doing something, he agreed. The Gryffindors around them were so miserable and felt so sorry for the Weasleys that nobody tried to stop them as they got up, crossed the room, and left through the portrait hole. Darkness was falling as they walked down to Lockhart's office. There seemed to be a lot of activity going on inside it. They could hear scraping, thumps, and hurried footsteps. Harry knocked, and there was a sudden silence from inside. Then the door opened the tiniest crack, and they saw one of Lockhart's eyes peering through it.
Mr. Potter, Mr. Weasley," he said, opening the door a mite wider. I'm rather busy at the moment, if you would be quick."
"Professor, we've got some information for you," said Harry. "We think it'll help you."
Well, it's not terribly..."
The side of Lockhart's face that they could see looked very uncomfortable.
"I mean, well, all right."
He opened the door, and they entered. His office had been almost completely stripped. Two large trunks stood open on the floor. Robes, jade green, lilac, midnight blue, had been hastily folded into one of them. Books were jumbled untidily into the other. The photographs that had covered the walls were now crammed into boxes on the desk.
"Are you going somewhere?" said Harry.
Well, yes," said Lockhart, ripping a life-size poster of himself from the back of the door as he spoke and starting to roll it up. "Urgent call, unavoidable, got to go." "What about my sister?" said Ron, jerkily.
Well, as to that, most unfortunate," said Lockhart, avoiding their eyes, as he wrenched open a drawer and started emptying the contents into a bag.
"No one regrets more than I." "You're the Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher," said Harry. "You can't go now, not with all the dark stuff going on here." "Well, I must say, when I took the job..." Lockhart muttered, now piling socks on top of his robes. "Nothing in the job description. Didn't expect..."
"You mean you're running away?"
said Harry disbelievingly, after all that stuff you did in your books.
Books can be misleading, said Lockhart delicately.
You wrote them, Harry shouted.
My dear boy, said Lockhart, straightening up and frowning at Harry, do use your common sense. My books wouldn't have sold half as well if people didn't think I'd done all those things. No one wants to read about some ugly old Armenian warlock, even if he did save a village from werewolves. It looked dreadful on the front cover. No dress sense at all. And the witch who banished the Band and Banshee had a hare lip. I mean, come on!
So you've just been taking credit for what a load of other people have done, said Harry incredulously.
Harry, Harry, said Lockhart, shaking his head impatiently. It's not nearly as simple as that. There was work involved. I had to track these people down, ask them exactly how they managed to do what they did. Then I had to put a memory charm on them so they wouldn't remember doing it. If there's one thing I pride myself on, it's my memory charms. No, it's been a lot of work, Harry. It's not all book signings and publicity photos, you know. You want fame, you have to be prepared for a long, hard slog. He banged the lids of his trunks shut and locked them. Let's see, he said. I think that's everything. Yes, only one thing left. He pulled out his wand and turned to them. Awfully sorry, boys, but I'll have to put a memory charm on you now. Can't have you blabbing my secrets all over the place. I'd never sell another book. Harry reached his wand just in time. Lockhart had barely raised his when Harry bellowed, Expelliarmus! Lockhart was blasted backwards, falling over his trunk. His wand flew high into the air. Ron caught it and flung it out of the open window.
"'Shouldn't have let Professor Snape teach us that one,' said Harry furiously, kicking Lockhart's trunk aside. Lockhart was looking up at him, weedy once more. Harry was still pointing his wand at him.
"'What do you want me to do?' said Lockhart weakly. "'I don't know where the Chamber of Secrets is. There's nothing I can do.'
"'You're in luck,' said Harry, forcing Lockhart to his feet at wand point. "'We think we know where it is and what's inside it. Let's go.'
They marched Lockhart out of his office and down the nearest stairs, along the dark corridor where the messages shone on the wall, to the door of Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. They sent Lockhart in first. Harry was pleased to see that he was shaking. Moaning Myrtle was sitting on the cistern of the end toilet.
"'Oh, it's you,' she said when she saw Harry. "'What do you want this time?'
"'To ask you how you died,' said Harry. Myrtle's whole aspect changed at once. She looked as though she had never been asked such a flattering question.
"'Oh, it was dreadful,' she said with relish. "'It happened right in here. I died in this very cubicle. I remember it so well. I'd hidden because Olive Hornby was teasing me about my glasses. The door was locked and I was crying, and then I heard somebody come in. They said something funny. A different language, I think it must have been. Anyway, what really got me was that it was a boy speaking, so I unlocked the door to tell him to go and use his own toilet. And then,
Myrtle swelled importantly, her face shining,
I died.
How? Said Harry.
No idea, said Myrtle in hushed tones. I just remember seeing a pair of great big yellow eyes. My whole body sort of seized up, and then I was floating away.
She looked dreamily at Harry.
And then I came back again. I was determined to haunt Olive Hornby, you see. Oh, she was sorry she'd ever laughed at my glasses.
Where exactly did you see the eyes? Said Harry.
Somewhere there,
said Myrtle, pointing vaguely towards the sink in front of her toilet.
Harry and Ron hurried over to it. Lockhart was standing well back, a look of utter terror on his face.
It looked like an ordinary sink. They examined every inch of it, inside and out, including the pipes below. And then Harry saw it.
scratched on the side of one of the copper taps, was a tiny snake.
"That tap's never worked," said Myrtle brightly, as he tried to turn it.
"Harry," said Ron, "say something, something in parcel tongue."
But Harry thought hard. The only times he'd ever managed to speak parcel tongue were when he'd been faced with a real snake. He stared hard at the tiny engraving, trying to imagine it was real.
"Open up," he said.
He looked at Ron, who shook his head.
"English," he said.
Harry looked back at the snake, willing himself to believe it was alive. If he moved his head, the candlelight made it look as though it was moving.
"Open up," he said.
Except that the words weren't what he heard. A strange hissing had escaped him, and at once the tap glowed with a brilliant white light and began to spin. Next second, the sink began to move. The sink, in fact, sank, right out of sight, leaving a large pipe exposed, a pipe wide enough for a man to slide into. Harry heard Ron gasp and looked up again. He had made up his mind what he was going to do.
"I'm going down there," he said.
He couldn't not go, not now they had found the entrance to the chamber, not if there was even the faintest, slimmest, wildest chance that Ginny might be alive.
"Me too," said Ron.
There was a pause.
"Well, you hardly seem to need me," said Lockhart, with a shadow of his old smile.
"I'll just..." He put his hand on the doorknob, but Ron and Harry both pointed their wands at him.
"You can go first," Ron snarled.
White-faced and wandless, Lockhart approached the opening.
"Boys," he said, his voice feeble. "Boys, what good will it do?"
Harry jabbed him in the back with his wand. Lockhart slid his legs into the pipe.
"I really don't think..." he started to say, but Ron gave him a push, and he slid out of sight.
Harry followed quickly. He lowered himself slowly into the pipe, then let go. It was like rushing down an endless, slimy, dark slide. He could see more pipes branching off in all directions, but none as large as theirs, which twisted and turned, sloping steeply downwards, and he knew that he was falling deeper below the school than even the dungeons. Behind him he could hear Ron thudding slightly at the curves. And then, just as he had begun to worry about what would happen when he hit the ground, the pipe levelled out, and he shot out of the end with a wet thud, landing on the damp floor of a dark stone tunnel, large enough to stand in. Lockhart was getting to his feet a little way away, covered in slime and white as a ghost. Harry stood aside as Ron came whizzing out of the pipe too.
"We must be miles under the school," said Harry, his voice echoing in the black tunnel.
"Under the lake, probably," said Ron, squinting around at the dark, slimy walls.
All three of them turned to stare into the darkness ahead.
"Lumos!"
Harry muttered to his wand, and it lit again.
"Come on," he said to Ron and Lockhart, and off they went, their footsteps slapping loudly on the wet floor.
The tunnel was so dark that they could only see a little distance ahead. Their shadows on the wet walls looked monstrous in the wand light.
"Remember," Harry said quietly as they walked cautiously forward, "any sign of movement, close your eyes straight away."
But the tunnel was quiet as the grave, and the first unexpected sound they heard was a loud crunch as Ron stepped on what turned out to be a rat's skull. Harry lowered his wand to look at the floor and saw that it was littered with small animal bones. Trying very hard not to imagine what Ginny might look like if they found her, Harry led the way forward round a dark bend in the tunnel.
"Harry, there's something up there," said Ron hoarsely, grabbing Harry's shoulder.
They froze, watching. Harry could just see the outline of something huge and curved, lying right across the tunnel. It wasn't moving.
"Maybe it's asleep,"
he breathed, glancing back at the other two. Lockhart's hands were pressed over his eyes. Harry turned back to look at the thing, his heart beating so fast it hurt. Very slowly, his eyes as narrow as he could make them and still see, Harry edged forward, his wand held high. The light slid over a gigantic snakeskin of a vivid, poisonous green, lying curled and empty across the tunnel floor. The creature that had shed it must have been 20 feet long at least. "Blimey," said Ron weakly. There was a sudden movement behind them. Gilderoy Lockhart's knees had given way. "Get up," said Ron sharply, pointing his wand at Lockhart. Lockhart got to his feet. Then he dived at Ron, knocking him to the ground. Harry jumped forward, but too late. Lockhart was straightening up, panting, Ron's wand in his hand and a gleaming smile back on his face. "The adventure ends here, boys," he said. "I shall take a bit of this skin back up to the school, tell them I was too late to save the girl, and that you two tragically lost your minds at the sight of her mangled body. Say goodbye to your memories." He raised Ron's spellotaped wand high over his head and yelled, "Obliviate!" The wand exploded with the force of a small bomb. Harry flung his arms over his head and ran, slipping over the coils of snakeskin, out of the way of great chunks of tunnel ceiling which were thundering to the floor. Next moment he was standing alone, gazing at a solid wall of broken rock. "Ron!" he shouted. "Are you okay, Ron?" "I'm here," came Ron's muffled voice from behind the rockfall. "I'm okay. This git's not, though. He got blasted by the wand." There was a dull thud and a loud "ow!" It sounded as though Ron had just kicked Lockhart in the shins. "What now?" Ron's voice said, sounding desperate. "We can't get through. It'll take ages." Harry looked up at the tunnel ceiling. Huge cracks had appeared in it. He had never tried to break apart anything as large as these rocks by magic, and now didn't seem a good moment to try. What if the whole tunnel caved in? There was another thud and another "ow!" from behind the rocks. They were wasting time. Ginny had already been in the Chamber of Secrets for hours. Harry knew there was only one thing to do. "Wait there!" he called to Ron. "Wait with Lockhart. I'll go on. If I'm not back in an hour..." There was a very pregnant pause. "I'll try and shift some of this rock," said Ron, who seemed to be trying to keep his voice steady, "so you can get back through. And, Harry..." "See you in a bit," said Harry, trying to inject some confidence into his shaking voice. And he set off alone past the giant snakeskin. Soon the distant noise of Ron straining to shift the rocks was gone. The tunnel turned and turned again. Every nerve in Harry's body was tingling unpleasantly. He wanted the tunnel to end, yet dreaded what he'd find when it did. And then, at last, as he crept around yet another bend, he saw a solid wall ahead, on which two entwined serpents were carved, their eyes set with great glinting emeralds. Harry approached, his throat very dry. There was no need to pretend these stone snakes were real. Their eyes looked strangely alive. He could guess what he had to do. He cleared his throat, and the emerald eyes seemed to flicker. "Open," said Harry in a low, faint hiss. The serpents parted as the wall cracked open. The halves slid smoothly out of sight, and Harry, shaking from head to foot, walked inside.